Welcome to SLA, where you can learn to avoid gaslighting yourself and your language teaching practices,
break down academic gatekeeping on second language acquisition,
and girl boss your way through dynamic, engaging, and research-based language teaching.
I'm Ben Fisher Rodriguez, and my pronouns are he, him.
I'm Bill Langley, and my pronouns are he, him.
I'm Brian Smith, and my pronouns are he, they.
Let's slay.
Welcome to another episode of SLA, Second Language Acquisition for Everyone. Today, we're bringing you a little bit of a different show because work and life has gotten the best of at least me. I don't know about Ben and Brian, but we have entered Divulsin, the dark evil vortex of late September, October, and November. I don't know about everyone else, but I am feeling it. And I just was not able to find a suitable article for what I wanted to talk about this week. So we were going to talk about cognitive load theory and what that means for language learners. But the article that I hastily found was not the best thing I've ever read. So we decided that we would just take the time to just check in, see how the school year is going so far, share our struggles, our successes, and what we want to continue working on and learning this year. So to start off, I was gonna share some things that I thought were going to go well, but maybe did not work as well as I would hope that they did. We're not as structured today. Hopefully we can also share a little bit more of our personalities as well, so that you know that we're not just language teaching robots. But yeah, so we're wrapping up our first grading period. It actually ended just today as we're recording. It is Friday. You'll be listening on Monday, hopefully. It's been an interesting one. I will say mostly I'm having a very fun time. I've got a really good group of students this year. But I think I've gaslit myself into believing that every year the students are the same. And who'da thunk, they are not. So what was working with my students last year isn't quite working with my students this year. But also, what didn't work with my students last year is sometimes working with my students this year. It's the joy of teaching. Every day, every year is something different.
And Bill, you've got different students? Like, you don't keep the same students each year?
No. So the way that our school works, I've got Spanish 1 and Spanish 4. Our school starts Spanish in pre-K. Students start taking Spanish once or twice a week when they're 3 years old. If they are a lifer, they've been at our school their entire school career, when they enter the upper school, when they're ninth grade, they typically go into Spanish 3. I've got Spanish 1 and 4. Spanish 1, in my time, this is my fourth year at my school, has mostly been new to the school students. They're freshmen that have not had any language class before. So that's usually a pretty small class. And then I have Spanish 4, which is mostly sophomores since they started Spanish 3 as freshmen. So I've got them as Spanish 4 sophomores.
Wow, that's crazy. Wild.
Yeah, this is what's like really fun. I have something that I'm really enjoying this year is that I've got a handful of students that I had my very first year at the school. So I had them in Spanish 1, and now I'm having them in Spanish 4. And it actually might only be 2. There were 3 at the start of the school year. But that class of Spanish 1 4 years ago, I would think over half of the students go to a different school now.
Getting away from
that's been really special for me this year, is to come full circle with a couple students and just seeing them from being little baby freshmen to little baby seniors has been really fun. So some of the things that I thought were going to work really well this year maybe didn't. I thought that telling the students every single day, let me know when you're confused, would train them to let me know when they're confused. Like, I don't know about you all, but I feel like I don't want to ever say that we have low expectations, but the expectations that we have are pretty basic. Pay attention as best as you can and be respectful of the people we're around and the communities that we learn about. And let me know when I have said something that I haven't made clear.
I always tell my students, I'm not trying to trick you. I'm not trying to one-up you. I know German and you don't. But I think that I'm not to say anything in the work of other colleagues, but I think that that behavior of asking for help and slowing down the class in quotation marks is not like richly rewarded, I think, in many educational contexts, because there's this pressure and speed and all that sort of thing.
I haven't been like consistent in thanking students for giving the positive reinforcement for doing what I want them to do. I want them to ask me for clarification when something's unclear. And although I do say that at the beginning of every single class, I'm working on being better at acknowledging when students are asking me for clarification, because I'm trying to tell them like, oh yeah, asking questions helps everyone. Even if someone thinks they know what I said, maybe they were just like slightly off. And it could be even like a slight difference between like in Spanish and in English. We have different words for like sees and looks at, right? So if a student thinks that mira, which I use as looks at or watches, if they confuse that with ve, he or she sees, it could change like the meaning of something. So if another student's like, oh, was that looks at? Oh, close. Yeah, like they're very similar meanings, but it's, oh, I forget what I said. Ve is see, whatever. And that helps everyone, because maybe someone else who thought or was pretty secure in their idea of what the word meant, they might have been slightly off. So it just helps everyone. So I'm trying to work on the procedure of if someone asks for clarification, we all do te apreciamos. Like we all appreciate you, which I do try it for like other things as well, which is also always fun. If someone sneezes in Spanish, you say salud. So if someone sneezes, I say uno, dos, tres, salud. And then I'll just uno, dos, tres. And then we all say salute. So I've been working on that with students, trying to get them to also say we appreciate you to people who ask for clarification. Because also that's a pretty brave thing to do as a teenager. Say, hey, not only am I potentially about to look like I'm sucking up to the teacher to show that I want to learn, but I'm also in front of all my peers saying, I don't know what is happening. Which is like a really hard thing as a kid, I think, to say in front of everyone that you don't know what's going on.
Do you have, Bill, I've got a question for you. Do you have student jobs? What you said about the sneeze thing, because I have a student whose job it is to like say the trois de un, and then everyone says bless you in French. And so I'm wondering, could it be helpful if you assigned a student to like, every time someone asks for clarification, it's their job to remind them to say that, so that there's some measure of ownership that they have over it?
I have tried to do helper of the day as an alternative to jobs, because I am bad at that organization. So I have done helper of the day from time to time. So I just make them do all of the things. But it's, so maybe, I don't know, maybe I do make like a list that I hand to the helper of the day saying, hey, these are the things you're responsible for. But yeah, I think that would be helpful. So I'll definitely be thinking about that. What about you all, before we get to our next segment? What do you think, what were you going to do this year that maybe you tried and it didn't work like you thought it was going to?
I would think my like, biggest struggle presently has been with speed, with pacing, is that I feel this pressure to go and make things happen and move on to the next thing and learn more. And I think that speed can be harmful sometimes in terms of learning outcomes and student comfort and their perceptions of how they are doing themselves. And so I'm thinking of like my upper level course. We've been talking about various holidays and celebrations across cultures. And I think I've just been hitting them with this culture does this, and this culture does this, and this culture does this. And it's been a lot. And then we had to absorb some German history because it was just German Day of Unity. And so you have to talk about the division of Germany into East, West. And so you go into a lot of historical stuff. And so I think I've been trying to make sure that they're comprehending along the way. So it's not just a total disaster of me blabbing in German about something. But I think in terms of the content might be feel like a lot, or even if they're getting the content, they might be like, but I couldn't say that in German, or I couldn't express that meaningfully. And so I'm trying to give myself permission to kind of decelerate a little bit. And it's funny when you were saying that just now about jobs, is that I find I'm at my best when something happens in the classroom and I go, it would be very helpful if this were to happen when X condition arises in the classroom. So when the first sneeze happens and I say Gesundheit, but then I can try to prompt myself and prompt the class to accept that job. And I think that would help in a lot of different, taking the time and knowing that every period I can just relax into it and go and get as far as we can and do whatever, that will be okay in the end, because I want students to have time to process the things that we're learning about. Learning is changing their brains, literally. So we need to allow time for that to happen, multiple exposures and different ways to manipulate new information. Instead of jumping from thing to thing, I'm going to try to go slower. Moment to moment, I'm going to try to breathe more. I think because I teach three classes of students that I've already taught before, I can jump right into quote unquote content with them like right away, because we're just talking German and it's like last year, part two. Where I think I'm recognizing that with my freshmen, first year German learners who are not used to me, they are very energetic. I think when I get nervous about losing their focus, I just like accelerate to try to keep up with them. But that I think makes the class feel more frantic. So you can't learn as much and it makes me feel more frantic. I want to have the time to slow down and assign jobs. I want to have the time to chew on content over multiple periods and different exposures and seen in different lenses. So I think that's been my struggle. It's just been like, every year I tell myself that a foundational skill to teaching, especially novices, is heavily modulating your pace of delivery and not just yapping at the speed of light, which I am capable of. I think that comes also with just a philosophical, personal zen that I am still developing. So that's where I'm at. Brian, what's going on with you?
I was wondering, what's your class period in terms of minutes? Is it, do you have block periods or like regular-ish, whatever?
So we have 7 classes, and 3 days out of the week, we meet with all 7 classes. 2 days, we have block days. So we'll have the even periods on one day, odd periods on one day. Typically, it's about 50 minutes with my kids for 3 days. And then 1 day out of the week, I'll see the same class for 90 minutes at a time.
Okay. Because I'm thinking about it and like, so we have block except for 1 day when we have 45 minute classes, and like I hate the short days because I feel like I have to go at the speed of light because there's not that much time, and I notice myself speaking a lot faster, and so it's reminding me of things that have happened in my own class. And when we have the block days, like we go slow. I think, like, personally, like I think the best way, the approach of like really any kind of teaching, is to limit the scope but go really deep, slow and deep is the best way to go for me. Having longer classes makes it easier for me to do that. I know we do not have control over our schedules, but could you think about ways to limit the scope of what it is that you want to teach them so that you feel that you can go a bit slower?
I think that's very wise, because I know a lot about different techniques and stuff. And so I get excited. I'm like, oh, we need to do TPR for movement, but then we also need to make sure to discuss and also the exit quiz. And so I got a backwards plan. Okay, I got 10 minutes to talk about XYZ topic, and it won't feel very satisfying if we only talk about it for 10 minutes. So I accidentally talk about it longer. So I have to shorten the write and discuss, or get rid of it completely, or not even do the exit quiz. And yeah, I think that's very wise. Be confident in my own class structure and in what I actually want to accomplish, but also have realistic expectations of what you can get done with the transitions that are inherent in a 50-minute period, right? Like, the kids are coming from elsewhere. I'm at the furthest end of my school, literally like Narnia. So my kids are often coming from far away. And so they're getting adjusted to that. They're worried about being late. Then they get into class and I'm immediately like, German. So I think being realistic about how long it takes to get them into the groove, how long we can stay in the groove meaningfully, and then have a smooth exit plan. I think that's wise. Yeah, I'm going to think about streamlining and trying to do less, because I am a maximalist in all things. So do less.
I've been thinking about it. It seems like everything that I'm trying is working. So,
okay.
Sorry, but I'm different.
Brian, please elaborate how you're built different.
One thing that I've been trying, maybe I've talked about this before with my lower level kids, is to set a timer in terms of wanting them to use the target language. Obviously, as novices, there's only so much they can really say. Really, it is to get them to not speak English. Despite doing that, they are producing more. It's like a level that's surprising to me. I'm like, all right, so let's see if we can do 2 minutes without English. And then level one students who've had 2 months of French are producing full sentences and reacting. They've got errors and they don't exactly have the vocabulary for everything, but they're still like trying to get their meaning across. I'm like, wow, this is great. And I don't necessarily, I've been like giving them a class point for getting through the 2 minutes or whatever. And so I don't want to make it too much into extrinsic only motivation territory. And I might take that aspect away at some point. But yeah, I've been impressed with their willingness to communicate in the target language, which is something that we always want.
You just do it 2 minutes at a time.
With the big level one. Yeah, I do 2 minutes and then I'm like, oh, do you want to see if we can do another 2 minutes? All right, if you say so.
I'm taking that attention span. Did you forget how I asked you about the 2 minutes 2 minutes ago? Here's two more minutes.
Yeah.
Nice. I love that. Yeah. I think kids rise to those challenges too. I have incorporated something that I learned from Ben Tinsley's blog, because like the 10-minute routine or the 2-minute drill or something like that, the kind of summation of all the things that he does in that 10 minutes, which is like, the first thing is they're journaling about gratitude, which has been super lovely. It's been really funny because, I don't know, kids are funny. So some days it'll be like, I'm grateful for pants because now it's pants weather and I like wearing pants and they keep me warm. And I'm like, great, perfect. And then other days it's, I'm grateful for my best friend who has seen me through thick and thin and trials and tribulations of being 16 and all the sorts of things and blah, 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 and that sort of stuff. And so you get like all sorts of stuff and you get a lot of insight into the life. And that's been really lovely. And then doing the social emotional check-in, he uses the blob tree, which I also love just because the blobs are so precious and every day you can be somewhere else. And then once he gives students time to talk with a partner about that, or maybe he does some teacher called on share out, oh, what's your gratitude today? Or like, where are you on the blob tree? Why? And has a conversation with the student or shares about them. He shares about himself too. Then you go, okay, so we've done that. That's like the getting warm. Then he does what he calls the 2 minute drill, which is set a timer for 2 minutes. Pick a random student and then just have everyone ask them questions. And it could be about their gratitude. It could be how about they're doing that day, their preferences, their kind of anything. And I've adopted that and I've been really enjoying it because one, I get to hear their gratitudes, which has been really lovely. Do the blob tree. My brain always goes blob baum because German, but the blob tree is just a nice way to open that emotional conversation. I asked my students how much they liked it, if they enjoyed it, just having a chance to barrage their classmates with questions, and we throw around my stuffed narwhal, a little stuffy or whatever, as a way of asking questions, like the talking piece. And they've just really enjoyed it because they learn things about each other. They get a chance to pose questions. But I'm also I've been trying using Class Dojo, which I've been hesitant to use because I am also like skeptical of extrinsic motivators a lot of the time. But I adopted something again that I learned from Ben, which is just tell the kids you're going to give them 1 point for a word or phrase, 2 points for a sentence, 3 points for more extended discourse where they explain the reasoning or give more details, that sort of thing. And then also tell them that it's not really a part of their grade. It's just a challenge for themselves. And maybe we'll have something nice once the class amasses X points or something. But my kids, just like you said, the challenge of like just 2 minutes, they're like, yeah, I can do that. Similarly, in mind, they will push themselves to say a sentence instead of a phrase now, or say multiple sentences instead of a single sentence, just because they feel like they're getting points and it's like bling. And so it's a little bit of trickery and a little bit of extrinsic, but it has actually increased the quality of the answers and the discourse. And I've enjoyed that. So I'm going to keep trying that one.
That kind of gives me an idea too. So when I do class discussions, I use Carrie Toth's Discussion Thursday rubric, which can be found on her website, somewheretoshare.com. And essentially, it's just like a list of tasks that students need to complete during the discussion. So make a statement. Like each time you make a statement, you get 2 points. Every time you ask a question, an original question, you get 2 points. If you use a rejoinder, you get, and for a class discussion, I usually say, if it's a whole class discussion, I usually tell students that they need to get 10 points. And that's me setting aside an entire class period to do. But I've thought about giving them like a bigger goal for the week. And just having them keep track of how much they participate during the week. And I think like that idea of it's not worth a grade, it's just a goal for you, is maybe exactly what I need for some of my like high flyers that think class is too easy. But I like, it's comment writing season for me. So I have to write a paragraph or so about every student and say, this is what you're doing well, and this is a goal for you. So I think that could, I'm trying to think about what to say to the high flyers, and what I'm going to be saying to all of them is I want you to participate more and like to have opportunities for interaction so that I can see like, how are you responding to things? How can I like alter my feedback? Going back to talking about like the comprehensible output theory, like I want you to produce language so that I know how to adapt my language for you. So if you can produce it, like weekly goal for them and using the similar rubric just for the week would be beneficial. So thanks for that idea.
So you're saying you'd have them keep track of it?
Yeah, I would have them keep track of it. I know, I'm gonna know if they're like lying about it.
I have personally completely given up on tracking participation. First of all, I'm just too scatterbrained to do it. And second of all, it becomes on Wednesday at 9:21, I raised my hand. Where's my point? And so I just can't personally deal with that anymore. The only thing I am doing, though, is for my level 4 and above, like they have to speak in the target language. And so every time they speak English without asking for permission first, unless it's like a very quick, like, how do you say this word? Like I write a tally mark for them. And so if they get a certain number of them, it starts to affect their grade. And that, I know it feels like punitive and it took me a year, but it is the only thing that is working. And they do, it has seriously changed their willingness to say things that I know they know how to say in French, in the upper levels in French.
I'd be real for a second.
No.
I think, like a preface, we all know our students the best, right? So what might be punitive and not work in one school with one set of students might be exactly what another group of students in another school needs. And obviously, like, hopefully we know where the line is. But I think, like, my students are also very grade motivated. And that's just, it's the culture we live in. It's the culture that students at my school come from. And so that's been like the balancing act, is like, how can I like get them to do the things that I want them to do because I believe it's best for their learning, while also motivating them in the way that they need to be motivated.
Yeah, definitely. You're right, it is context dependent. And just because so-and-so wrote XYZ in a book for their class in their context doesn't mean that you have to do it exactly the same way, or doing something different is wrong or illegal. You're right, you know your students.
I'll push back on that. And if you honestly wrote a book, you know what you're talking about.
Yeah, okay. So I'm going to write a book that says in every single school in the world, you have to actually
book forthcoming, write Smith 2025.
And anyway. I hope everyone could tell that was sarcasm.
Yeah, and honestly, I do give them a lot of chances. It's not like they speak English once and they're grade tank. They honestly have to do it 12 times for it to actually affect their grade. But still, just the act of writing the tally mark, for some reason, they're like, oh, suddenly I remember that I'm expected to do certain things in this class.
It's one of those things I think that feels like a hard hurdle at the beginning because you're always watching, and that feels gross, and I don't necessarily want that to be the vibe. But I think it's one of those things that once it establishes itself as a culture thing, you're doing less of that weird watchfulness anyways, because the kids are just like, oh yeah, it feels good. And like in German class, we talk German, which I think I've been thinking about while we've been talking about like how unnatural I'm sure that feels sometimes to just say entire sentence in German, because maybe they're used to, I do a lot of choral responses. They're used to saying a word or two at a time. And I'm not like sitting there being like, say more. So I'm like trying to get them ready to, but I think that, yeah, there are students who are ready for a push. And I know even within my upper level class, which is third and fourth year kids, there are kids you can push further. And there are other kids that you provide a little bit more scaffolding for. So you say the answer, you give them like an either or to try to help them with that. Or you ask a question and then give examples of answers. There are kids who have been getting the comprehensible input, who have been getting the interaction and are ready for that next little push. And it's going to help them, I think, maybe access their systems a little bit more fluently. I've been rereading Common Ground by Henshawn Hawkins. As part of a district book study. And that's been nice to remind myself that the input is what builds the system, the understanding and the sense of what German is. But it's the output from them in the interaction is what gets them able to access that system more fluidly, I think. And so I think you need lots and lots of input to access that system and make sure it's nice and built. And I think the focus on input is not misplaced. Again, some kids are ready for the push. And so it's at first, yeah, it feels weird. And then with time, it just establishes itself. I think my third years and fourth years right now are getting to that place where the upcoming second to third year class is feeling the vibe from the fourth year class who has been just trying so hard to do everything in German. Hopefully the vibe will establish itself and it will all even out in the end.
Yeah. And also for me, it's not necessarily about tracking participation because I felt like that would harm students who are just naturally more introverted. And to me, it's just about using the language. So if they only say one thing in the class period, but it's in French, like I'm still happy with that. And it doesn't affect their grade and it helps everyone stay focused on whatever it is we are focusing on, which is input. I think that it's just so distracting to use English, especially when you're trying to do more like complex advanced things with the upper level kids.
I've been trying to balance my desire to push them towards more complex language and have a better read on what each individual student is ready for. And in that upper level class I was just referring to, there are 36 kids. And trying to get in my 50-minute period, get 36 kids to produce a complex extended discourse, it's just a tough order. My level two classes are smaller, but then my level one classes have 30 or 33 students. And it is hard to referee all of that. So the teacher's listening to this and being like, how could I get more kids to participate with more fluent language? Like, you also might run into the logistical hurdle of timing and trying to find more efficient ways to get kids to produce language. So that might be like partner retells, or I played the question and answer game, and that's a good one to do more or less spontaneous interpersonal, or there are just like a lot of ways to do it more in small group controlled settings, because yeah, managing that many kids and trying to get all their responses and validate them and elaborate on them and make sure everyone's along for the ride, it's tough. It's logistically tough.
All right. Ben, how do you feel about unlocking some gates or gatekeeping? Maybe you have some secrets that you want to keep from all of us.
Brian once said that he enjoys being cloaked in mystery, and maybe I'll pull that angle. No, I think one thing I was learning about is cognitive load theory. And then my colleague sent me an article so whack that we didn't even read it. So we did read it. It was just pretty whack. For the listener who's curious, it took an approach to language teaching that the three of us do not support in any way. It was just very like, when forming the this tense, do the this, follow this flow chart. And I was like, eh.
Okay, and in my defense, the title was very captivating.
But it put me down this rabbit hole of just learning more about cognitive load. And I was like, yeah, maybe that is something that I can like think about for a little while, is just that like your brain is not an infinite resource. And it has limits in terms of the amount of things it can hold in working memory. So what you're currently thinking about and listening to. And so finding ways to lessen the cognitive load so you can actually process what you're learning better, be more likely to make a long-term memory, be more likely to be able to use it fluently in the future. Use dyslexia-friendly fonts when you're writing stuff. You can search those. I use LexEnd at the recommendation of Meredith White. When you write stuff on the board, use clear handwriting so they're not expending mental energy.
Apologies to my students for my rant. No handwriting.
Mr. Langley writes on the board, but only with clipped out newspaper clipping. I think just reducing the amount of distractions. So what they're looking at is going to either cloud their mind or be a more focused space. And so for myself, sitting in the seats in my classroom and seeing what they see, but then using graphic organizers and chunking material out so that way it's not overwhelming. One adage that comes from the comprehension-based communicative language teaching world is the shelter vocabulary, not grammar, which is that it's a vocabulary, the like mental load of vocabulary is what kind of blows your brain up because it's new sounds and meaning put together and you have to make those connections. And so really limiting new vocabulary as much as you can and then using it repetitively so that it can find its way to get processed and put into students' system.
Can I chime in on that?
I think that is relevant. Yeah.
Which that's why I was looking for an article this week was exactly because I was like wanting to explore the idea of shelter vocabulary, not grammar, which is a quote that I think is attributed to Susan Gross. And I wanted to find out if there was any research around. So I spent a lot of time trying a bunch of different keywords to find something. And I settled on trying to find something with cognitive load because going back to our episode on extensive reading, it talks about like why it's important to read easy texts with known words, easy enough that your brain can focus on sorting out all of the grammar rather than using all of its resources on sorting out the vocabulary. So that's where I was like wanting to go this week anyway. And I think going back to gaslighting, I thought it was going to be enough to tell students, hey, I know that you're understanding everything that I'm saying, and that's great. And I know that you're feeling bored in class, and that's not great. It's okay that the language that we use in class is easy because we have to use a bunch of different grammars to talk about the topics that we're discussing. And the vocabulary needs to be easy so that you can talk about it in a more complex way.
Yeah, that's smart. And maybe you have experienced this where when your students get to the upper level, they have lots of language and they've done lots of stuff with the language. I think because of the US American conception of what language fluency is, they think that the switch is just going to flip and then they'll be able to do super complex things all of a sudden. But it's still the scaffolding up towards that. And so we can pick more complex things. They still require the scaffolding to simplify some things or help them cognitively arrange the information that's coming in. I think one last thing about cognitive load, just because again, like we read the article and we're like, maybe this is not the article for us, but I went on this rabbit hole of cognitive load theory as relates to education. And it matched up with something. I read a book over the summer called How Do We Learn by Hector Ruiz Martin.
That's in my TBR list.
Okay. I'm trying to think of the plot of this science book. Yeah, it talked about dual encoding, which is making a memory stronger by linking it into kind of two different representations. And so I think when people maybe saying a word while pointing at it is two different things because auditory and reading is different. But something I learned from that book is that and something I've actually learned about reading before is that when you're reading, you're actually activating the phonological loop. Because you are reading aloud in your own head. So that same part of your brain is actually being activated. So yes, obviously we should model pronunciation and be writing words in the target language, perhaps with an L1 translation and pointing at them and pausing. That's just a good skill for comprehensibility. But I think if we can also link it to an image, so draw a little picture, if you are capable of such things, I am not. Or if you can have imagery ready is helpful. But then also things like TPR. TPR is a visual representation of something. And I think that could be a great way to dual code. They have the auditory written reading part of their brain covered and then the visual part covered by seeing a gesture. That's what I've been trying to, in addition to sheltering vocab and like trying to think about my room from like a brain business perspective, is also just like, how can I do this in multiple different ways? And multiple different ways is not just
typing, you can use emojis.
Brian's on an emoji kick and is aspirational. Yeah. Brian, tell us how you're using those emojis.
I've been getting really good at, how do I express want in emoji? There's no want emoji, but you can create the idea of it. And I think that it's engaging to them, one, to try and figure out what word I'm referencing, but then also associating the images that they're seeing, the emojis, with the word. I've been pleasantly surprised by how effectively they've been able to recall vocabulary that way.
But what context do you use that in?
Like for warm-ups.
Shared writing. Okay, yeah, that's a way to get them reading to start and then recalling vocab. Yeah, totally.
Brian, do you have any interests that you're wanting to ungatekeep for the rest of the year before we move on to how we've girl bossed this school year so far?
Not particularly.
And no.
You know it all.
Yeah.
as evidenced by the beginning of this podcast, what's going badly this year? Nothing. Built different. Yeah. So work.
All right. Then Brian, do you want to lead us off into what has been going well with Girl Boss?
Yeah. Everything is going well for
Done.
Go for it.
I mentioned a few things already, like just thinking about the successes I've experienced with my level one class, and then just like the motivators, different kinds of motivators that I've come up with to help the upper level kids as well. Because I use standards-based grading, my students don't get points for doing assignments, which is a big culture shift for a lot of students. But the ones that are used to me, they get it. And I've changed some things around where, again, unfortunately, there's a bit of more punitive aspect to, you're not going to get a point for doing it, but if you have X number of missing assignments, then that is going to affect your grade. And so now I'm seeing like a lot more students who might have in the past thought, if there's no point attached, then I don't have to do it. That attitude has lessened a lot. And I've been shifting the responsibility onto the students in terms of communication. If you have X number of assignments, you need to write a letter to your parent and tell them why it's missing or when you plan to do it, or just keep the channels of communication open and making them to be the ones to do it rather than me. And so I've been getting into contact a lot more with parents around that kind of thing. I think knowing that they have to do that is also motivating them to not get into a situation where they have to do it. And it's not working perfectly with everyone. I think there are some students who just struggle in general with school and work completion, no matter what it is that they're doing. And you could try almost every trick in the book and they will struggle with it. It's just a matter of learning personally, like what that particular student needs, rather than just trying to blanket apply whatever strategies. I guess like girl bossing in terms of, I'm seeing a large amount of improvement, but not perfect.
I love that you've inspired me. I was thinking about when I wanted to do this, but there's an English teacher in Texas named Shanae Bond, who I follow on Twitter. And she has an assignment where she has students send an email to their home adults, essentially outlining what their grade is and why. And I have been toying with doing that for a long time because I want to increase that communication with home loop and just do that at intervals. And I think that you talking about having your kids communicate more with their families about what their assignment is, what their assignment universe is like and stuff like that. I'm like, yeah, I think I got to do that this week because I will be coming back. I'm currently at Casper College in Casper, Wyoming with the Wyoming Association for Language Teaching. And they are very slay here. I love them. They are so funny and nice. But because I'm gone, that means I've given kids for the first time. This is my first absence this year. This is the first time that they are having to complete things more independently without my watchful eyes. And so I'm going to have some conversations when I get back of, hey, there's some things missing because I'm not sure what you did while I was gone. And that just happens. That happens every year. But I think increasing the communication about it is a good way to go. So thank you. That gave me the inspiration I needed. In terms of my wins for this year, my girl bossing, I had two things that came to mind. My first girl boss win is probably my classroom library. German reading materials, I think, are slightly harder to come by than Spanish or French when it comes to like comprehension-based materials. And through a combination of a donor choose project funded by my family and friends, and then just telling parents at back to school night, hey, I would never expect anything of you, but if you want to donate, here's an Amazon wish list, like a bunch of books I found that would be good for your kids to read. My library has increased like so much even just this year. And that feels really rewarding to have options to offer kids when they're reading extensively. I also put out a little library card checkout system. And I've been having kids taking books home and coming back and been like, I finished that book. And I'm like, what? This is amazing. Just by being like, it's a thing. And then they just do it. And I'm like, I love that. second girl boss for this year. First one, classroom library, slay. The second one I would say is I'm just feeling very positive about my enrollments. We are at the whims of little middle schoolers when they're choosing their high school things, and I can't count on anything any given year. But I was looking at my numbers from when I started at my current school to now, and the program has grown 70% in terms of student enrollments. Really rewarding and exciting. I'm working on a blog post about program growth right now on my personal teacher blog because I've been thinking a lot about it. The too long didn't read version is knowing your student population to know what they want. Mine wanted college credit of some variety, so I found a way to make that work. Having extracurricular opportunities. I have a very robust and fun German club in a National German Honor Society. That helps a lot. A focus on proficiency-based learning. There's research that kids feel more positively about their courses when they're proficiency-based than when they're more traditional, so grammar and vocab-based. And I think the last thing is just like making students feel like they belong. I've made great efforts to make my curriculum more inclusive of marginalized voices and different identities, and making sure that I'm looking at the kids in my room and reading their IEPs and honoring who they are and learning about their cultures and their families. And I think that has really paid off over time in terms of enrollment. And it also just makes my job.
It sure does sound like you slayed the start of this school year.
Oh, wait. But wait, Bill, aren't people going to conferences? Isn't conference season beginning? Which one would I like to go to? You didn't ask. I would probably go to Comprehensible Midwest. You heard right. CI Midwest. Did you know that I have a discount code for you, Bill?
What? A discount code? Tell me more.
I would love to. Thank you so much. If you want to go to Comprehensible Midwest, to our friends at Comprehensible Midwest, exactly like I think I've said before, I'm not doing very many conferences this year. I was lucky to be invited to Wyoming, and they're so lovely here. But I'm not doing other conferences, and I'm jealous because I would go to Comprehensible Midwest in a heartbeat. If you would like to go, you yourself, it's coming up.
It's
week.
Friday.
Get your butt into gear. Girl boss your way to the registration.
If I was able to go and I needed a discount code, what would that discount code be?
The discount code for 15% off your registration is CISLAYS15. So that's CISLAYYYS15. One Y for each of the three of us. Again, use that to get 15% off. But as Martha said in the podcast that we did with her a couple podcasts ago, there are other discounts for multiple people going from one department. There are lots of different ways to get a discount and to go slay that workshop.
Bye.